Welcome to this edition of When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a discussion of sustainable living and what that means to you and me. I'm Jay Warmke.
And I am Annie Warmke, Jay.
Annie, as ready as you're going to be. And today we're going to talk about the future of utilities, or clean, safe, too cheap to meter, right?
I don't know what the heck that means.
Well, that was a famous statement from, I think it was somebody in the Department of Energy, talking about nuclear energy was going to be so clean, safe, and too cheap to meter.
After it kills all of us, nobody will have any idea.
You know what? You're projecting into the future. Don't worry about that. So the idea, and by saying this, we're running the risk when we talk about the future of utilities that these unanticipated problems, like nuclear waste, things like that, are going to mess up this clean, safe, too cheap to meter world. But I'm going to geek out a little bit today.
Just today?
Whoa,
I
live my life in Geekville. And so we're going to talk a little bit about utilities. bless you. So and really, when I'm talking about utilities, I'm talking about electricity for the most part here today.
So I just want to say that one of my favorite things is from the book When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine. And it's the history of all those dead white guy scientists. And so I was hoping today you're going to tell some of those stories, because I think that's what makes this all interesting, because I am not a geek person.
No. You find this stuff as dry as unbuttered toast.
It's time for a nap.
So with that ringing endorsement, let me talk a little bit about electricity, right?
But wait, what about the dead white guys?
Well, I'm going to talk about the dead white guys.
Right.
So history of electricity.
All right.
History of electricity. Taking ourselves way back. Most of these descriptions always start with around 1880 with the Pearl Street station. Thomas Edison setting up the first electrical utility.
That's what it was called, Pearl Street Station?
Yeah, the Pearl Street Station.
In New York?
In Manhattan.
Manhattan. Okay.
And they had 59 customers.
Wow. So, they were all rich people, though, right?
Well, of course.
It was like running an extension cord or
something?
That's what
history is all about. It's effectively an extension cord. And they really could only go a couple of blocks. That was one of the problems. It was a DC electrical system. So DC being the power that comes from batteries, solar panels.
So it was losing power the further it got away from the building?
Right. The limitation of voltage drop led to it was very limited in its nature. But fairly quickly on, with the whole Nikola Tesla and inventing the AC power system, a fellow named William Stanley formed the very first utility in the booming burg of Great Barrington, Massachusetts, right, in 1886. And I find it fascinating because all of these things tend to link together. But this utility was very, very similar to what utilities are like today. Stanley invented the vacuum tube. He also invented the transformer, and the transformer is what allowed electricity to be raised in voltage and then dropped down in voltage, which avoided that whole problem of distance.
But are you saying then that Mr. Stanley actually was the first to create the electric that way?
Well, he created the transformer, and so he essentially was the project manager who put in the very first utility.
So
he
Edison was lying?
No, Edison did the first one, but he did the DC system. Oh. Then there became this battle between Westinghouse and Edison. Stanley worked for Edison, or worked for Westinghouse.
Uh-huh.
So did Tesla. Tesla moved from Edison's to Westinghouse after the rumor is Edison wouldn't pay him. And so he moved over. So Westinghouse was the big competition, and it was AC versus DC, and we got into it. It's a whole other story of the Battle of the Currents.
Okay, but tell us just what's the difference between AC and DC, because that sounds like some kind of
you really want me to
geek out
on
a porn show or something.
Uh-oh. Nope. DC electricity is what we would think about when we think about electricity. Most people think about water going through a pipe. You know, if it's 12 volts, that's the water pressure, and it's just constant, and the electrons are flowing through the pipe. That's DC. AC is a sinusoidal waveform. You know, it's like it's much, much more complicated.
Like a roller coaster, you mean?
The electrons don't really go up and down a roller coaster going, like water through a pipe. they're vibrating and nudging against each other like those little balls that clack into each other.
Oh, cool.
And they move through the pipe in a vibration mode, knocking into them. So and there's much more complicated than that.
All right, but that's good. I got it. There AC you go. Versus DC, but Tesla with the, versus Edison.
Yeah, with the advent of the transformer, now you could begin to send electricity over longer distances. And the very first one of these was put in Great Barrington, Massachusetts by Stanley, who later went on to develop the Stanley Thermos Company.
Wow, that's still going
vacuum
today
tubes.
Unless Walmart put him out of business.
And his son teamed up with J.P. Morgan's grandson to form Morgan Stanley.
Wow, everybody was getting rich.
Yeah, all these white dead
guys.
Well,
what an exciting time must have been.
This was the age of opportunity. And we are in an age like that right now, a transitional age. Anyway, so this was the beginning of the utility. And the shift.
You mean the beginning of electric?
Yeah, the electric utility. But the beginning of a utility
period.
Of any form.
Okay.
And so what ended up happening is Edison's private secretary, who was a fellow by the name of Samuel Insull, he moved to Chicago, and he found that with these larger with the AC system, you could put in larger generators. These were all steam generators. And actually, most people don't realize electricity is still generated pretty much
From steam,
yeah. Boiling water and running steam through a turbine. And whether you're burning coal or using nuclear power, you're still just boiling water and running the steam through. So Insull found with these larger generators, you could have a larger monopoly, essentially. He bought up all of these little companies that were smaller utilities, and he formed them into a larger utility, which he called Commonwealth Edison. And Commonwealth Edison was one of the very first what became known as a natural monopoly. This is always great.
Are there unnatural monopolies?
Oh, there sure are. And even natural monopolies are unnatural. But if you call something natural, then people think that it's just as a matter of course and not motivated by human greed. So he created...
if people think that through, Varna.
Oh, yeah. Well, come on. It's all in the marketing. So then these natural monopolies started springing up where larger companies were controlling the electric. And being monopolies, they didn't behave themselves. So the states got in and began. And, of course, that hotbed of regulation, Wisconsin, led the way. Everything good happens in Wisconsin.
Those cheese lovers.
Uh-huh. They're great folks up there. And anyway, they got into the regulatory. And for a long period of time.
They got into regulatory what?
Of utilities.
So they're going to regulate them say you can only do certain things?
Well, as people became more and more dependent upon electricity and these companies were not behaving themselves in a humanitarian way, the states stepped in. Some states were better at regulating than others, and it became then, of course, because the industrialists were not malicious enough, the bankers got involved.
So the industrialists were like Ford and people like
that? Well, the Edisons, the Westinghouses, all of these guys. Well, now the Carnegies and the Morgans, they came in. And what ended up happening is the banks sort of took control of the investor-owned. And by 1932, eight companies controlled almost three-quarters of all of the electrical utilities in the country. Well, when the stock market crashed in 1929, there was a pushback against this. And when Franklin Roosevelt ran for president, he actually cited the electrical utilities, calling them the Ishmaels and the Insulls, whose hand is against every man. Isn't that great?
Really? But what does that mean? Because they
basically mean they didn't contribute enough to his campaign, probably is what it meant. But anyway, so he then pushed through in 1935 the Public Utilities Holding Companies Act, or, you know, known by everybody in the industry as PUCA. I love that acronym. And anyway, he created the regulations that held pretty much in place until the 1970s. By the 1970s, we got into the energy crisis era, And that led to the development of the Department of Energy. So when we think about the way things are regulated, it's not like this thing has been around for a long period of time. Really, the regulatory atmosphere that we've been operating under is kind of a 1970s on. You know, you maybe push back to the 1930s. And what developed was an electrical system where vertically integrated companies, which means they produced the electricity, so they generated it, they transmitted that to the customer, and then they billed the customer. So those are three distinct tasks that are taking place within a vertically integrated company. And that's important to understand because now we're gonna mess up that system.
Okay, right? but so me not being a geek, I would love to hear a dead white science guy story.
Do you have one right now? I don't. Well, okay. No, I'm into modern day here. I'll tell you a dead white science not later. But so anyway, we get into the essentially the next step in all of this is 1992, the National Energy Policy Act, where what they were saying is, okay, we've got these vertically integrated companies. You've got a generator, a transmitter, and a biller.
What's a biller?
The person who generates the bill, customer service people. Let's make it easier for people to get into the generation. Let's split generation from transmission. So they said, all right, from now on, we're going to just make that distinction. You can go in and create your own power plant if you want to, and that's going to be a thing now. We want to encourage this competition. Now, they weren't encouraging it a lot because I just found out when I was looking online for this stuff that actually there was a long period of time from 1978 through 1987 where natural gas, it was illegal for you to use natural gas to generate power. And this is one of those things that happens often in regulation is a new technology comes along. Today it's solar. The legislature steps in and says, we want to protect the old technology. In that case, it was coal. Today, it's coal, what do you know,
or natural gas.
And let's prevent these guys from competing on an even playing field.
So what you're saying is nothing's really changed in that corporations still own the legislature and still control the legislature.
Yeah, I didn't say that because I don't want to have to look under the car when I started each day. But anyway,
it's a rental car. We'll be all right. Okay, no, it's not registered to us.
Okay. So anyway, so they said, okay, now you can become an energy generator, but remember, the competitor owned the transmission lines.
But was this the time when they're saying you could choose?
Not yet.
Okay, we're not there yet.
Not yet.
Be patient.
Be patient, little one. The story continues. So anyway, so then they came back in 1996, and they said, with appropriately named Order 888, which sounds like somebody getting pizza on the phone or something. But anyway, they...
Or toll-free number.
I know. But now they required that those utilities had to allow these new generators open access to the transmission lines. And then in 1999, with Order 2000, they now allowed customers to choose. So we're taking baby steps into this world of electrical deregulation.
But did people really choose? I don't remember there were choices.
Well, now in certain states, you can. You can say, I want to get my electricity from this company versus that company. You're still getting it from the same delivery mechanism. So if your utility is AEP, you can buy it from a different generator. But the power is still coming through AEP's lines to you, and AEP is still billing. But there is a disconnect between the generating company and the one that's transmitting it, and then the one that's distributing it, and then the one who's billing you for it. So these are all being disconnected. Okay, so that is the history. But before we go on to the present and the future, let me remind you that you are listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke, reminding you it is indeed the end of the world as we know it.
And thank God, especially after all this geek
stuff. Okay, she's looking at me. It's the end of the world if you're a utility company.
Yeah.
So the exciting thing about all of this, I mean, history is interesting, and all the dead white guys are still dead and they're still white, but they're the precursor. Now we say, okay, we've gone from these natural monopolies, vertically integrated. We're now breaking up their functions. And now the question is, you could say they were never natural to begin with, but the world is changing. Technology is changing. So when I talk about generation, well, who is a generator? In the past, you used to have literally billions of dollars to build a power plant, whether it's nuclear, gas, coal, a wind turbine power plant, whatever, a wind farm. Now you can put solar power on your roof. You are now a power plant. You're now a generator. So the barriers to entry in the generation market have become almost zero.
What does that mean, generation market?
Well, when you put a solar panel up on your roof, you're now an electrical generator. You're a utility.
I thought you meant like generation, like people.
Oh, well,
I mean,
no.
Like generating
this
power.
This is Generation X, the solar generation. But anyway, so you've said, okay, back in the 1990s, we said, all right, we want to open up the market to generators. They didn't think they were talking about end users. They thought they're talking about other potential political
donors.
But
they weren't thinking that you were going to have that on top of your house. That's
right.
What an end user is.
So right? then you've got the distribution system. There's long-distance transmission, and then there's local distribution. And these are often owned by different companies, different entities. But your local, what most people think about is the power lines. Those are owned, if you're in the AEP region, they're typically going to be owned by AEP, and they maintain them. Well, what if the generation is on your roof? You become less dependent upon that distribution because you're essentially putting in your own distribution.
Of what you don't use. Right?
Well, no, you're running the wires from your array to your house. That's your distribution network. Now you get into the whole world of what happens if I have too much or not enough. That's when I need the utility. So that's the net metering thing where you say, all right, I'm going to send some back to the utility and I'm going to bring back some when I need it. Well, because the utilities were not that keen on cooperating by putting their competitor on their customer, the state legislators typically stepped in and said, look, if you want to be a utility, you have to now accept the overproduction as long as these people don't overproduce. Right? You with me now?
I know. I'm familiar with this, yes.
Okay. All right. I'm just checking. So now we get to the stage of this is all fine when only six people have solar. What happens when a significant number of people begin to generate their own power? And this is the area that we're moving into. So the laws are set up that says if you are a generator, you're supposed to have access to the marketplace. Well, the problem is now if the utility says, I don't want to buy your excess power, what are your choices? So this is when we get into the predictive and the speculative end of what this is going to mean to you and me. Because
what's the deal with the whole idea of that transmission is less important?
Well, because transmission, it used to be when you had a large centralized power plant, all of the power had to go from that power plant to the end user. Now it's more like that's kind of using the analogy of computers. That would be like a big mainframe with a lot of dummy terminals and all of the data is going from the mainframe to the terminals. What we've ended up by putting solar onto your roof, we've created smart terminals. We've created your own laptop, essentially. And now the only thing we need the utility for is the internet, right? We're fairly self-contained, but if I need to send a little out or bring a little back, so the traffic on that power line is greatly reduced. I'm only drawing what I need like at night, and I'm sending a little bit back when I don't need it. But even when I send it back, it's usually just going to my next door neighbor. Electricity always goes to the closest thing, the closest load. So I'm not transmitting it long distances. It's just being distributed through my local neighborhood.
So at this moment, I want to hear about the future, but I also want to hear a dead white science guy story. This is the part I've been waiting for the whole episode is, because, I mean, I know all this stuff. I edit your books. I know most of this stuff. But it's the stories. It's always the stories that are fascinating and how it applies to history and how it turns out.
Well, I don't know. The only story I can think about for transmission issues, it reminds me when Catelyn was a baby and she'd say, "Papa, tell me a story about walking on the beach," or whatever. So here's the story. Okay, the story of –
But this is a true story.
Well, this is sort of a true story. I mean, history, I forget who said it, was lies written by liars about things they weren't involved in. So we always have to take history with a grain of salt. But the story, the Battle of the Currents dealing with Niagara Falls, that was really the first transmission issue. And the city of Buffalo wanted to be electrified. Niagara Falls was the source of that electricity. And it was a battle between Westinghouse and Edison as to who would generate. Yeah, the Niagara Falls. Well, Buffalo was known as the City of Lights. That was the first major electrical project in the United States. And so ultimately Westinghouse won because of AC electricity. That was the ability to send that electricity over the enormous distance of 20 miles from Niagara Falls to Buffalo, New York. And DC simply couldn't cut it because by the time the power got from where it started, it would have drained down to nothing because of voltage drop. So, and they used to, as part of the whole Battle of the Currents, Westinghouse and Edison would send people around to different cities and they would electrocute animals like on the public square to show how dangerous the other guy's electricity was. The DC.
Like theirs wasn't.
Right. AC is safe. DC. Look what happens to this poor stray dog.
Elephant. They killed an elephant.
Right. In New York City, they killed an elephant.
So horrible.
And Edison tried to get people to use the term to be Westinghoused when you were electrocuted. So the spin doctors were in place and nothing seems to change.
Didn't he then design an electric chair?
Well, of course, one of the first things with any new technology is to figure out how to kill people. So anyway, so what does this – back to the future. So what does this mean for the future? Well, what I can envision is the utilities, as they reach a certain saturation point, are going to say, I don't want to buy this excess electricity because they're essentially paying retail. When you send that back to them, they give you credit for it. And they're saying, I've just built a new power plant. I don't want to buy all of this power at retail, which is reasonable from their perspective. So what does that leave you? Well, I can see in the not too distant future, a company like Apple taking advantage of the fact that these utilities must provide open access to the transmission lines to basically amalgamate all of this extra power from end users and reselling it to other end users. And so for $5 a month or whatever, you get a little app on your phone. You're part of the iPower network. And what we will see is utilities morphing more from a brick and mortar AEP or Duke Energy kind of model to a social networking kind of model where the entities such as Apple, just to use them as an example, it could be anybody, any of the Silicon Valley types, or some garage that hasn't, some young kid in a garage who's about to be the next billionaire, creating the next utility of the future, which is taking all of this excess power that is currently being sucked up through net metering and then reselling it to other consumers who have come to hate their local utilities, because anytime you have to deal with a monopoly, they're fun to hate. And then it becomes just a customer service thing. And Apple is a lot better customer service than your local utility. So it's going to be interesting to see how that morphs. But I would be very concerned if I were a public utility because the whole industry is about to change. If I go back As I said, when Stanley created the very first utility in Massachusetts, that utility doesn't differ very much from the utility of today. But if you were to use the example of a telephone company, when Alexander Graham Bell stole the phone from somebody else, that's a whole different story. The phone system has changed dramatically over the years. I mean, what we had in the early days of the telephone system does not reflect in the least what the phone system of today is, with satellites and wireless and internet and mobile phones and all of these kind of things. This is the next stage of the electrical utility. We are about to transform that as dramatically as the telecommunications industry transformed from plain old telephone to the communication network that we have today. So we're going to see utilities looking more like Facebook. We're going to see utility lines becoming the next internet, which is the Internet of Things, with all of your appliances communicating using the same electrical lines that they get power from to communicate with each other and with humans in some capacity. And don't ask me how that's going to happen, because...
Yeah, but it makes perfect sense.
Right? So yeah. Now your toaster is going to be talking to your refrigerator, which, you know, I'm feeling paranoid
about
that.
Going to get married or something. Proposals right. are on the horizon.
Refrigerator porn, things
yeah.
like that. So,
well, one thing I was thinking, though, is that it also seems pretty dangerous, because let's say that Apple is amalgamating all this electricity that's being generated, and then suddenly those of us who are in that mix go, we don't like something anymore, so we just shut it off because we're the ones generating the power, and everybody yeah. decides to do it at the same time.
Ooh, electrical anarchy.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Yeah, I don't see that it's any more dangerous than having one monopoly that has that control either through design or incompetence.
But we don't, I'm saying people would hold the key in that regard. It wouldn't right. be the companies if we were the ones that were being amalgamated and we shut it off.
Well, the taking it one step further, we've seen what's referred to as grid parity, where it's cheaper to build your own solar array than it is to buy electricity from the grid. That happened about 2012. We're fast approaching generation plus storage becoming grid parity. At that point, you don't need a utility at all. And at that point, you become a self-contained island of electrical generation. That changes everything to an even deeper extent, but that's probably something for another day.
Episode?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So any final thoughts? You've got 20 seconds here to
okay. Well, just to say that I think it's all fascinating, but a lot of it's way above my head, and there's too much jargon, and that's what I hear from other people. But I think it's fascinating, and I think it tells us that the future is full of opportunity.
It sure is. So anyway, you have been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. Thanking you once again for spending just a wee little bit of time and a few electrons with us. And as your grandmother hopefully told you, the secret to a happy and sustainable life is...
Turn off the lights, clean up your mess, and eat your vegetables, Jay Warmke.
Eat your vegetables. Till next time. Bye-bye.
Mother Earth will sing, and her children will be healed.
You can find more information on living sustainably in our unsustainable world at BlueRockStation.com.